Blog Talk Radio.
It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, let in light and we banish it. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time.
To the Red Fox Blogger with your hosts, Kel and Tim. And today we are discussing and celebrating Christmas, but we also want to remember those out there who are less fortunate. It is not all snowy and white out there for many people around the globe, but there are also a lot of people within our own communities that are suffering. So I'm going to read a parable to you a little later on. We have some Christmas messages from Canada, the United States, and the UK, courtesy of our dear politicians. And we're going to talk about the war on Christmas, and we have a sound clip for that. But right now I'm bringing on the fellow host, that wonderful Cat Strangler 101. Merry Christmas, Tim.
Good evening, Kel, and how the devil are you tonight?
Doing devilishly fine.
Well, that's good. No cat flap jokes tonight, you know.
I'm
that's right. I'm starting to miss the weekly banter. Yeah. That's a bit more like it, Kel. Make me feel at home. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that.
No cat flap, though, tonight.
Okay, that's good. So, this evening, I have to say, I managed to get onto the website with absolutely no Blog Talk Radio problems at all, which is.
And I noticed you're in the studio.
Yeah, and I'm in the studio.
In the chat room, rather. Yeah,
in
you're in the chat room as well.
I've actually got the chat room up in front of me, and that's quite unusual because it's been a bit hit and miss with Blog Talk Radio over the past couple of weeks, and there was an incident not so very long ago where I really got quite vexed about Blog Talk Radio, but tonight it's looking good.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, you know what? Here, Blog Talk Radio.
It's official. You suck.
I love
it
the way you're doing
been,
that.
It's been a real, bugger for everybody. Yeah, it has. It's driving me crazy. I swear there is no wizard behind that curtain. I swear.
Yes, I see that Vorpalbyte2 has made a comment saying the chat room is working well. A little too well. Looks around suspiciously. And that's exactly... That is exactly how I feel about it as well, Mr. Vorpalbyte. So you're not alone.
Oh, no. Absolutely. But at least you're here now. Oh, boy, that makes me happy.
Well, good. That is my goal, to make people happy, and you in particular, Kel. And I did actually have a go. If you recall, a day or two ago, I said I was going to try and record you a little music clip, and I have had a go at doing that, and I've sent you a little music. Unfortunately, the quality is not quite good enough, I think, to play on the radio as it currently stands. But at some point, maybe not this evening, you might like to take a look at it and see if you can do anything.
Sure.
Which apply the magic touch with your Auti music tidying up program, and who knows? I might hit the number one Blog Talk Radio music spot yet. So there you go. But it's a little something that I constructed myself. I hesitate to use the words composed because that sort of makes me sound like it was properly planned and executed. But it's a little bit of a little music clip that I made up myself. And even if we can't play that one because of the quality, as I say, I'm not particularly happy with the quality. I will, over the Christmas period, I will try and put something together which is slightly better for you. But nevertheless... you can have a look at that and see what you think.
I will do that. Just before we move into the first segment of our Christmas special, I just want to ask you, are you ready for Christmas?
Am I ready for Christmas? I certainly am. It's Christmas Eve tomorrow, and tomorrow afternoon I shall be going out doing my my Christmas shopping and making sure that I've got everything I need from my extended members of my family. I always like to leave an hour or two before closing time on Christmas Eve to get these things. I don't like leaving it to the last minute, so I always make sure I've got an hour or two in hand.
Very good.
I'm all ready for Christmas.
Very good. Mr. Kell was battling the malls today, and he comes home and he says, "I have no idea what to get you. It's crazy out there." He says, "God, I'm beginning to hate this time of the year." And I said to him, I said, "Look, you are buying me a bathroom. I really don't think you should worry about, you know, buy me anything like that." I suppose, too, when you've been married to the same guy for 30 years, that it's, when we were newlyweds, if he had said, "I'm buying you a bathroom for Christmas," I would have probably divorced him then and there. But now, you know, as you get older and things around the house need to be done, you're on your hands and knees in gratefulness. "I'm getting a bathroom," and you're so excited.
Well, yes. Yes, that's I know exactly what you mean.
I was talking about that on... go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say there have been times in my life where I've come home. I'm divorced now. I hesitate to sort of use this as an example of what you should do to sort of achieve a harmonious married life. But yeah, there have been times where I've come home and with totally inappropriate presents and almost been turfed out on my ear. So I know exactly what you mean. But yeah, a bathroom, that's very good. I bet that takes a lot of wrapping paper. Hey, what's this under the tree this morning? It's a bathroom.
Propolite, what he wants for Christmas is, yes, Propolite wants a soap on a rope or an Obama head chia pet. And to knowledge that a woman's favorite gift, a bathroom. I remember helping my friends redo their bathroom, almost cost a divorce.
Yes.
This is why I'm glad my office is in the basement, you know, in the bunker, as it were. Because if anything is going on up there, I don't want to be anywhere near anybody, because I just know that it will create all sorts of arguments. So
well,
I'll leave it at that.
In fact, you reminded me of a little anecdote, which I'll if we've got a moment or two before we start the show, when I first got married and we moved into our first house, one of the first things that as a newlywed husband I was expected to do was do a bit of DIY, and because this house needed a little bit of work to it, and one of the things I was asked to do was to put in a new bathroom, surprisingly enough, and rather than pay somebody else to do it, being the cheapskate that I was in those days, I decided to do it to myself. I thought, well, you know, all right, you know, I'm an engineer, how hard can it be, you know, get a bathroom suite, put it in, bish bash bosh, and Bob's your uncle. So anyway, the first thing we had to do was take out the old bathroom suite, and we had one of these great big baths. It was, I don't know what it was made of. It might have been cast iron, but it was enormously heavy, and I had to get my brother-in-law to come and help me down the stairs.
Clawfoot tub?
It was a great huge thing, and it was, well, the important thing was that while he was helping me down the stairs with it, we got about two steps down from the top of the stairs, and then my brother-in-law said the one sentence that I didn't really want to hear, which is, Tim, I don't think I can hold this bath anymore. And I was on the other end, I was at the bottom underneath this bath, and my brother-in-law was at the top threatening to let go. And he says, I'm going to have to let go. And I said, I'd rather you didn't do that, if you didn't mind. But he let go, and this bath chased me all the way down this flight of stairs, and I just managed to leap out of the way at the bottom of the stairs before the bath flew off the last rung of the staircase and gouged a great big hole in the floor of the hallway. And that was my brush with death from DIY. And so ever since then, I've said, I don't care how much it costs, I'm going to get somebody in who knows what they're doing, because for one thing, you know, what's it going to cost me? It's probably going to cost me just as much if I do it myself, because once I do a bit of DIY, somebody normally has to come in and redo it again because the effect that I've made isn't all that it might have been. And the other thing is, I can't really afford to have heavy cast iron baths chasing me down the stairs, because one day one will catch up with me and I'll be in real trouble. So I thought, well, I'll pay somebody else to do it, and that's what I've done ever since. So I quite
that's
understand
the wisest way to do it.
Your husband,
yeah,
your
my
husband,
my my circle of friends, they're all handymen. They're either carpenters or they're plumbers. It's just, when you grow up in the sticks, these are the kind of careers that we pursue. And so we're rather fortunate that we have quite a few friends that are much more, how shall I put it, accomplished at engaging in these projects. I think if my husband attempted to renovate a bathroom on his own, yes, like N2 Knowledge says in the chat room, yeah, it would start the divorce proceedings. And and to knowledge what he said, he became Dr. Phil before Dr. Phil became Dr. Phil when he was helping a couple renovate their bathroom.
Yeah. Well, fine. But I remember this particular house that I was fixing up at the time, I thought I tried my hand at all sorts of little DIY things, you know. How hard can it be? A bit of plumbing, you know. Well, how hard is that? It's only sort of getting a couple of pipes to stick together. And one of my plumbing exploits. I was knocking down a chimney breast in one of the main rooms downstairs, and I came across these pipes behind the chimney breast, and I thought, well, they don't look like they're doing anything very much. I don't really want these here. I'll saw them off. So I got a hacksaw, and I was halfway through sawing through one of these pipes, and then water started spurting out from it, and I thought, ooh, I wonder where that's coming from. And I was like, I was like the little boy with his finger stuck in the dike, you know, and I was on my own, and I thought, I can't walk away from this because water will get everywhere, all over the carpet and everything. So I had to stay there until my wife came back, and she could help me, and we got some tape, heavy duty duct tape, and tied this pipe up, and eventually got a proper plumber in to get it all sorted out. But the first thing he said was, "You shouldn't have sawed through that pipe, you know." Because it was one of these pipes that was like a main feed to the rest of the house. You shouldn't have done that. And I said, I realise I shouldn't have done that now. So, plastering, I did a bit of plastering. We had to get a plasterer in to sort of redo the entire living room. Brick lane, we did a bit of brick.
No, every Christmas you're going to remember that story.
Oh, yeah, now I think of it, I've got plenty of stories along those lines, but I think that's probably enough stories for one evening.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is your handyman. Yes, Cat Strangler 101 is your handyman. Boy, oh boy. Ladies.
Yeah, I'm available for all sorts of little
he's
of
a
your
cat.
Friends.
He's a
doing.
Yeah.
You're a catch baby.
Yeah, you know, oh man. So yes,
I don't know where to. I have a parable that I'd like to read, but I also have a clip here about the war on Christmas, and then of course you've got your thing you'd like to share if that be the case. We have some sound clips here too, Tim. Some Christmas greetings from Barack Hussein Obama. We have greetings from David Cameron and Nick Clegg. The 12 weeks of Obama Christmas. I'm wondering, I'm actually almost thinking that maybe at the bottom of the hour we'll play the 12 weeks of Christmas by the Jimmy Z Show. But before we do that, I did open the show in saying that, you know, I love Christmas. I truly do. This is, after Easter, I think this is probably my most favorite spiritual Christian remembrance of Jesus Christ. And it's just beautiful. Oh, Tim, I wish you could see my backyard. Unfortunately, we had an ice storm. It was very devastating. One of the worst that we've had around here in years. All of Eastern Ontario, Quebec, the Maritimes, a lot of homes without power, over 350,000 homes at one point yesterday. A lot of families are still without power, and power probably will not be restored until tomorrow or even Christmas Day. There's a lot of families out there that are pretty cold. But one thing that this ice storm, though, what it did is it caked everything in ice. And I have these dogwood trees in the backyard. And they looked like something out of the Chronicles of Narnia. They're so beautiful. I took some pictures of them, and I'm going to post them later on my Facebook page so everybody can see them. But it did make the backyard look rather magical. But I do want to think about the people, though, that are without power. And this time of year, ladies and gentlemen, this is not what we want to bestow upon our fellow men. But there's a lot of things going on out there around the globe. A lot of strife, a lot of wars, a lot of children suffering. And there's a lot of things that you can do to help people. I'm going to get into that one in a minute. But I want to share this, Tim, and this is the spirit of Christmas. This is the seven candles of Christmas. Christmas is time that Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus. It is also the time we remember his gifts of life, truth, and love. Christmas is also a time to take time to give thanks for the many kinds of gifts we have received at Christmas and throughout our lives. For those of us with children, remember always what special gifts they are. Those of us in good health, those who are fortunate enough to live in nice homes, should give thanks for these gifts and never forget these and those who have not been so fortunate. Christmas is a time to remember all the gifts that we have been blessed with and to remember those less fortunate, the ones whose gifts have not been as plentiful as ours. Even as we celebrate Christmas with our families and our friends, there are young men and women in far-off lands defending our right to celebrate or not celebrate Christmas. Remember them at Christmas. Remember them always. Somewhere there is a mother who cannot find food for her children. Somewhere there is a father who has lost his job and cannot provide even the most basic necessities for his family. Remember them at Christmas time and never forget them. Let them struggle. Let their struggles, rather, remind you of your blessings and gifts. It is by God's grace that you are blessed. Somewhere a family huddles together trying to find warmth on a cold winter night. Somewhere a sick child is crying. Somewhere there are people who don't know who Jesus is or that Christmas is his birthday. Pray for them at Christmas and remember them always. Surely, of all times of the year, Christmas is the time to give thanks for our many blessings, our children, our talents, our love, our families, our friends, our homes, our health, everything we take for granted every day and seldom give a second thought of. Many are not so fortunate. This Christmas takes the time to remember the gifts that we have received. Those good gifts which we have been blessed with are gifts for all seasons. Christmas is a time to forgive those with whom we've become angry. Christmas is a time to forgive those who do not agree with us. Christmas is a time to forgive our enemies and remember our friends. Christmas comes at the end of the year, and it is a good time to let go of the things which trouble us and to begin anew. Christmas is a good time to strive to be a better person. It is a good time to remember, reflect upon, and practice the lessons that that man whose birthday we celebrate on Christmas Day taught us: forgiveness, charity, forbearance, kindness, generosity, and most of all, love. Now we have the seven candles of Christmas. This Christmas, let us light seven candles in remembrance of the true meaning of Christmas. Light the first candle for that man who gave birth. We celebrate on Christmas Day. May that fire from that candle light the world. Light the second in honor of the gift of his love. May the light from the candle touch every heart, those who believe and those who do not. Light the third candle in honor of your children and your family, for they are among your greatest gifts. Light the fourth for the young men and women in the armed forces who sacrificed so much that we may have the right to celebrate Christmas or not in accordance with our own beliefs. Light the fifth candle for your friends, for they indeed are among your greatest treasures. Light the sixth for the less fortunate ones, for the mother who has no food to give her child, for the father who has no job, for the children who go hungry. May the glow from this candle guide our conscience. And light the seventh candle for those who are suffering, for those who are ill, forgotten, lonely, for those who are homeless and are huddled on dark winter nights in the unseen corners of cities all over the world. In remembrance of them, let this candle light it and let it burn. And may the light from this candle burn always, lest we forget them when Christmas has passed. May the blessings of Christmas be with you always. Celebrate Christmas with love and joy and share it with those you love. May your family find peace and happiness and love in the glow of the seven candles of Christmas, and pray for peace on earth. May the spirit of Christmas live within your heart at Christmas time and always. For our family, to your family, Merry Christmas.
Well, that's lovely, Kel. I'm always in awe when you give a speech like that, and it really is very touching. And yeah, like you say, there's a lot of people around the world who are a lot less fortunate than we are, and we certainly ought to think of them. And that's certainly something I tend to find myself doing a lot more than I did perhaps when I was younger. And I think possibly something about growing older does make you a little bit more compassionate with thinking about people less fortunate than yourself. So, yeah, that's a great thought, Kel.
You know, when I was like you, when I was younger, I never really gave a thought to others at Christmas. I was rather dismissive and consciously dismissive in that I would think to myself, well, what am I going to do? I can't feed the world. What can I do? And why should I even care? And then when you think about it, it's amazing that somewhere out there is a little child, whether it be in Africa or North America, that is suffering greatly, whether it be due to war or poverty or anything of that nature. So, yeah, I do think about my fellow humankind. I really do. And it's not only Christmas time that I do. I pretty much do every single day. I think because of being a counter-jihadist, you think about the people who suffer under this certain regime. And it just makes me more conscious. I think Christmas, although we should be doing this every day, I think Christmas is always a great time to remind people that, hey, there's somebody out there and they're hurting really bad right now. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you, I mean, I remember many years ago that I thought completely differently about Christmas. I thought of my family, obviously, but I was very focused on my family and I wasn't really focused on the wider world. And although family is obviously important, I think it does behove us, for those people who have enough to eat and have a roof over our heads, it does behove us to think of people in the wider world who are less fortunate. And it's a sad fact that you've only got to turn on the TV today and it's full of advertisements and things encouraging you to think of yourself and your family, but not to take a little time to reflect on what's happening in the wider world and maybe encourage you to do your little bit for the wider world. But, that's why we're all here really listening to this show, because one of the things that we do, although we don't necessarily state it every day, every week when we come on this show, is we are trying to do something that will help the wider world with the fighting the scourge, because the scourge is something that if it ever became sufficiently powerful to take over all the Western countries in the way that it might if nothing is done, then humanity as a whole is going to be really, really badly or much worse off than it is now. So I think it's an important thing that we do here. And if we can't do our little bit to fight the scourge and make the world a better place for the rest of humanity, you know, I'd have a hard time, you know, facing my children and grandchildren when they ask me, as mm-hmm. I'm sure they will when they're old enough, especially my grandchildren, when they're old enough to understand what it is we're fighting, you know, and they'll say to me, "What did you do in the war against the scourge?" And I hope I'll be able to say, as you will, that at least we tried to do our best, and in our own little way, we hope we inspired other people to go out and make a big difference. And I think that's what we're here for. And in some,
that's
so there
exactly
are some times,
it.
There are some times when I think, well, that is what we're here for. Everything that I've gone through in my life, and I've had my fair share of trials and tribulations, not as serious as other people, admittedly, but there's been times where I've felt sorry for myself and wished I'd maybe taken a different path at some points in my life. But at the end of the day, here now doing what I'm doing, and my whole life has been a preparation. I can look back now and I can say my whole life has been a preparation for doing what I'm doing now. If I hadn't experienced those things, I might not
that
be doing
is
what I'm doing
a
now.
Wonderful way to say it. I would say that I'm on the cusp of becoming self-actualized, because yes, life has very harsh lessons, But you rise from those ashes, and you take the hardships that have come across your way in life, and you learn from them. I think that yes, this is I'm on a wonderful journey now.
Mm.
Yes,
well,
becoming self-actualized.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that now. I feel that what I'm doing, and I'm sure you feel the same way, that there is no more important task in the world than what we're doing now, which is making people aware of what is happening in the wider world and how we're being threatened by things that a lot of people don't even realize is a threat. And before an effective fight back can be waged, we have to make people aware that there is a problem that needs to be fought against. That's the first stage. And we're right on the forefront. We're at the front line of the people who are actually doing that. And there's no more important job in the world at the moment, as far as I can see.
Exactly. I think with that, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And we're going to come back and talk about the war on Christmas. But I have a Christmas greeting here, Tim.
A Christmas greeting? How lovely.
This is actually from Bob. Actually, no, I'm going to save that one. I want to play this one. And this is the 12 Weeks of Christmas from Jimmy C. Maybe what we'll do, we'll play this and we'll actually come back. And then we will. I'll play a clip regarding the war on Christmas.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Here you go, guys. We're going to see you back here in 4 minutes.
By the first week of Obama, we are going to see a $7.4 trillion bill. By the second week of Obama, we are going to see a terrorist attack and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the third week of Obama, we are going to see millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the fourth week of Obama, we are going to see runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the fifth week of Obama, we are going to see $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the sixth week of Obama, we are going to see card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the seventh week of Obama, we are going to see wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the eighth week of Obama, we are going to see no free speech, wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the ninth week of Obama, we are going to see jackbooted thugs, no free speech, wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the 10th week of Obama, we are going to see investors all leaping, jackbooted thugs, no free speech, wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the 11th week of Obama, we are going to see calls for impeachment, investors all leaping, jackbooted thugs, no free speech, wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill. By the 12th week of Obama, we are going to see cries to bring Bush back, calls for impeachment, investors all leaping, jackbooted thugs, no free speech, wide open borders, card check legislation, $5 gas, runaway inflation, millions unemployed, a terrorist attack, and a $7.4 trillion bill.
Ta-da! And I want to thank Jimmy Z for that from the Jimmy Z Show at the Jimmy Z Show blogspot.com, who always gives me permission to play all of his material. This one is a couple of years old, and, well, I think things have changed a little since he composed this song, but I think people understand the sentiment. The reason why I wanted to hone in on Obama, because he's a supposed leader of the free world, and look what he's doing to the rest of us. So I thought that was pretty good. What do you think, Tim?
Well, yes, I think so as well. I'm always rendered speechless when I see what the latest thing that it is that Obama has done, because I would not have thought that he could so quickly have put America into the fix that it's currently in. And really, it's just the one guy. Obviously, he's got a big infrastructure behind him, and he's got people mm-hmm. like Holder backing him up. But one of the questions I was asking up until fairly recently was, why on earth has he not been impeached? And then somebody sent me a link, which I'm going to just try and find now if I can, saying how difficult it would actually be in practical terms to impeach him. And it was something I hadn't appreciated. But the sad fact is that it's all right, my pop-ups are playing up again. Just bear with me just a second. The sad fact is that the process of impeachment requires a two-thirds majority. I think is it in the Senate or is it in the? I think it might be in the Senate. I'll have to actually read the article, and the chances of actually getting the two-thirds majority in the Senate are tiny, and that's one of the reasons why he's unlikely to be impeached. And I thought all that you needed to do was to have somebody stand up and say, we think this guy is doing terrible things, we don't want him in office, I move to get him out of office, and there would be the equivalent of a trial or something, and the evidence would be presented and he'd be booted out. But it's not as simple as that, and I find it amazing that the laws and the way that things work in the United States are allow somebody like Obama to do what he's doing, which is to completely ignore the Constitution and to pretty much pass any law or ignore any law that he wants. Without any kind of comeback from anybody, he can do exactly what he wants, and there's virtually nothing. Well, as far as I can see from what I'm being told, there's absolutely nothing that anybody can do about it, and that just seems to be a crazy situation that nobody ever seems to have thought. Oh, here's the article. I found the article. I'm just going to post it. Nobody seems to have thought that there would ever be a president who would ride roughshod over the Constitution to the extent that Obama has, to completely ignore any kind of restriction on what it, on what he's might do. He's got absolutely no moral imperatives at all, as far as I can see, to stop him doing something because it's bad. He just thinks, I can do it, therefore I'm going to do it, and nobody can stop him. It just seems absolutely crazy that situation has been allowed to arise. But nevertheless, if you want to have a read of the article, it's from a website called thelastgreatstand.com, and I've put the link into the chat room and people can have a look at it, and if they want to discuss it further, they can do. But I mean, it's absolutely appalling, and I feel so sorry for the people in America. I'm not an American, obviously, but I have been to America on a couple of occasions, and I've always found the people that I've met over there to be some of the nicest people that I've ever met. And to see what Obama's doing to the country, it's heartbreaking, really. It really is heartbreaking. So anyway, that's my little contribution for you, that website link for people to have a look at if they were wondering why it's such a problem getting him out of office. Well, that goes some way to explain it. So,
that's interesting. And I bookmarked that article. I'm going to read that later on tonight. That's fascinating. I was just glossing over it as you were describing it. There's a lot of interesting material in there, folks. So, yes, please try to bookmark it and read it later on. It is, well, what can I say? It's profound. I just don't, I don't know what to do with this guy. I think that the, like, other world leaders are getting rather impatient with him. He's not well received in Canada. And you're right about the American people. I listen to all these radio programs on Blog Talk Radio, citizen journalists, and I can hear the frustration in their voices when their hand is forced to discuss the latest exploits of this usurper and thief. And my heart goes to the American people. So I call myself an Ameri-Canadian. But being in North America and living right next door to the greatest nation, I live on, and I always say this, I live in the best country on the planet, but I am next door neighbors with the greatest nation on the planet. And it's true. As America goes, so does the rest of us. And so Obama, what he's doing to the United States is just absolutely unforgivable. Listening to all these radio hosts when they have to speak about him, I can hear the frustration. I can hear it. 2014 is the by-elections, people. Do something. Get your house back. Get your Senate back. Get everything back.
Well, yes.
And on that note, Jim, I think the American people will. They're a great people. They have made this little red fox from Canada feel very, very welcome on all their programs and in their chat rooms. Wonderful, warm-hearted people, generous people, kind people. They deserve better than this.
They certainly do deserve better, and I for one certainly hope that they can take matters into their own hands and bring this episode to a conclusion without undue bloodshed. But Vorpalbyte 2 says there's no longer any possibility of resolving our differences with the government. Violent revolution is inevitable at this point, and I rather think he may have a point there. I would hope it doesn't come to that, because if it does come to violent revolution, you know, there will be thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people who will lose their lives over this, and it's just crazy because of one man's narcissism, egotism, and his willingness to ride roughshod over the law and over the Constitution, and he's going to cause probability, I would say, he's going to cause a lot of death and destruction before America gets back to a point where it can regain its standing in the world. That's going to be a really hard thing.
Absolutely. And he's also highlighting the United States on the world stage as the great Satan once again.
Well, yeah.
He's putting the United States in a very, very, very bad spot. He's putting that deal heard around the world with Iran, for one. He's compromising Israel. He's destabilized the Middle East. Everybody in the Middle East knows who Obama is. A lot of them idolize him because they think that he's Muslim Brotherhood, and that's why I call him the usurper and thief, because I don't think he may. I don't care where he was. I'm not a birther. I'm not into that gig. But he is not an American in spirit. I think him and that evil wife of his, she is terrible. I think they really truly have it in for the United States.
Well, it would certainly appear that they do. I mean, I take the position on his birth certificate is that it's an obvious forgery. What has been uncovered and presented to the American people and to the world far is an obvious forgery. And it's I think it was Sheriff Joe Arpaio, I think the famous guy in mm-hmm. I think it's Arizona. He got a team of forensic guys to actually work on this, and they came up with a report on it and said there's the percentage chance of it not being a forgery is so minuscule that it doesn't mean anything in realistic terms. That's as close as you can get to saying in legal or scientific terms that something is or it isn't. The percentage chance of it being a forgery
there's something
100%.
Fishy about that, absolutely.
Even if it wasn't the birth certificate, he isn't an American in spirit. There are things that if you wanted to make your country great or retain its standing on the world stage, there are things that you really shouldn't be doing. I mean, I'm not an American, and I could do a better job than what he's doing, and I could at least make sure that if I was in office in power for 4 years, at least when I came out of power, I could make sure that America was not worse thought of than before I went in. I mean, and I'd do it for half the money that Obama's doing it for. I mean, the fact that I'm not
eligible. Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm not an American.
I think, like I say, I don't care where he was born. The point is that he is the supposed president of the United States. But one thing about that birth certificate that got my bells ringing was, when they posted it on the internet, I was reading it, and race, it said African American, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. Back then, in the 1950s, he was born. I think it was 1957 or 58. He was born. Back then, it would have been listed as Negroid. There was no such thing as a hyphenated American back then.
Oh, there's
so
all
I found
sorts
that
of,
rather.
There's all sorts of issues regarding the birth certificate. I'll have to dig out the report, I think, from Sheriff mm-hmm. Arpaio's team and put that in the chat room when I next get the opportunity. But I read through it, and okay, I've had some scientific and engineering training, and I know what has the ring of truth about it, and I know what doesn't. And this report certainly had the ring of truth about it. And coming from somebody like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, which his reputation goes before him as a very upstanding person, I would accept the report as it stands and say it certainly indicates to me that Obama has no business being where he is in the White House. But anyway, he is where he is, and I do hope the American people can get him out without violent revolution. Vorpalbite2 says, I was referring to thousands or tens of thousands of people who might die during such a violent revolution. And Vorpalbite2 says, more likely to be millions. And well, I just hope it doesn't come to that, is all I can say, because it would be a terrible thing and so unnecessary. But, well, it's
there we go.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get into the war on Christmas, but I want to lighten things up just a little bit, because I started this and it's Christmas time, everybody. Hey, Tim, I've got a mm-hmm. greeting from Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, I'm going to play this, and guys, we'll see you back here in a little under 5 minutes, and that'll give Tim a chance to refresh his tea and perhaps dig up that article as well. We'll see you back here in a few, guys.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, Good Day is a Christmas part of the album, and you can play this at your Christmas parties or to yourself on Christmas Eve if there's nothing else to do.
Good Day, eh?
Yeah.
In case you thought, like, I wasn't on this part.
Oh, I guarantee you, you'd be on. Okay, now, this is our Christmas song in case you don't know what to get somebody for Christmas.
There's lots of ideas in here, so listen and don't get stuck.
Okay.
By the way, that's me on the organ.
You start.
Okay.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a beer.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtlenecks
and a beer.
Okay.
On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French toast,
two turtlenecks
and a beer.
Okay. That should be more there, right?
Where?
On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 4 pounds of back bacon,
three French toast,
two turtlenecks,
and a beer
in a tree.
Oh, yeah.
More.
The fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 5 golden toques,
4 pounds of back bacon,
3 French toast,
2 turtlenecks,
and a beer
in a tree.
Okay, on the sixth,
2 golden Christmas, my true love gave to me 6 packs of 2 4s,
5 golden toques,
4 pounds of back bacon,
3 French toast,
2 turtlenecks,
and a beer
in a tree.
Okay. On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 7 packs of smoke.
Nice gift. Oh, 6 packs of 2 4s.
5 golden toques,
4 pounds of back bacon,
3 French toast,
2 turtlenecks,
and a beer
in a tree.
Right, I keep forgetting.
Okay. This should just be the 2 days of Christmas. It's too hard for us. Go home.
Oh, 8 days when the true love gave to me
8 comic books,
7 packs of smoke, 6 packs of 2 4 5.
5 golden toques,
4
packs of smoke,
3
packs of
2 4 5. And a beer. Yeah, that beer is empty. Okay, day 12.
Good day, and welcome to day 12.
Yeah.
5 golden toques,
4 pounds of bag bacon, 3 French toast,
2 turtlenecks,
and a beer in a tree.
Where did you learn to do that,
album?
Come on. So, like, that's our song. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And good day.
Good day.
And welcome back, everybody. I said 4 minutes. I meant 2.5 minutes. But, yeah, Merry Christmas from Canada, and I hope you enjoyed that. I was looking in the chat room, and I noticed that it's filling up quite nicely there, Tim, and we really do want to thank people joining us for our Christmas special and our special on Barack Hussein Obama. But but we want to thank Bigfoot, Cat String. Oh, yeah. I want to thank you, Tim. We want to thank Echo, Eric from Kafristan, Catgirl23, Luchadora, N2 Knowledge, who is a new face, and I'm so glad that N2 could be here to listen to our program. Rem Soldier, Vito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia, and Vorpobite, who is enjoying throwing Canadian snowballs. We also want to thank everybody else who listens on other devices because we know you do. We also want to thank people who listen on the telephone. And Tim, I have this for them. Here, guys, mm-hmm. Merry Christmas from Tim and Kel. Here you go. Anybody was wondering what on earth was that? That was the goat They were singing you Merry Christmas. Everybody knows that I'm addicted to the Super Deluxe edition of the Goat Screams. I play that on just. I play the Super Deluxe edition on. I take little tidbits from that, and once in a while, I'll throw them onto a Jeff show. But I just love those goats. Everybody knows Kel likes her that goat Super Deluxe edition. So that was from the goats to you, ladies and gentlemen. Wishing you a very Merry Christmas. There you go.
Oh dear.
Oh.
Well, I wish I had something to follow that with, but I I haven't. Your sound effects are just too good, Kel. They're just too good. I've no intention of upstaging you.
I'm a bit of a brat. I am. I'm always surprising people if I come on their show. I always have a little something going on in there. This is one of my. What can I say? Oh, come on. You're a beautiful. I wanted to talk to you about the war on Christmas. Like, I'm getting really sick and tired of this, Tim. Every single year. Is it Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays? Why are we so politically correct with our Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays? I have a clip here, though. I'm going to play it. I kind of threw things at Tim because I was rather remiss in sending him the show highlights until something like 2:30 in the morning, my time. So I've been kind of throwing things at Tim. I'm going to play this clip, though, Tim, and we can come back and talk about it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I know you want to play.
Yeah, anytime you're ready.
No, I don't want Geico insurance. Okay, you're being very, very, you're being very naughty. Come on. Oh, what a little bum it's being.
There's almost time to tell everybody the story of how the cat strangler got his name, but maybe we could leave that till later if you're going to play that.
I don't know if it wants to play. I think, you know what? Well, I'm trying to get this bad boy to play for me. Why don't you do that? I love this story, Tim.
Okay. I did tell this story yesterday on the EDL radio show, so apologies to any listeners who've already heard it. But I get asked quite a lot, especially on my Twitter feed, about my handle, CatStrangler101. And a lot of people write to me and they say, I'd like to follow you on Twitter, but I'm afraid to because I think you might come around and strangle my cat. So I have to tell them this little story. And I'm actually very fond of cats. I've never strangled one in my life, and I'm sure I never will. They're one of my favorite animals. But the nickname came about in this fashion. Many years ago, when I was a little lad still at school, about 10 years old, my parents decided that it would be a good idea for me to learn a musical instrument.
Oh, did we lose you, Tim? Oh, I think we lost Tim.
Oh, no, I'm still here. Sorry about that.
You went out in the stratosphere for a second there.
Oh, okay.
Carry forth.
All right, yeah, I was just going to say, when I was a lad, about 10 years old, my parents signed me up for some violin lessons. I think they thought I was going to be the next Yehudi Menuhin, and I would become a famous concert violinist and support them in their old age. So anyway, they signed me up. Things didn't actually go according to plan, because at the end of every violin lesson at school, I used to have to take the violin home and practice at home. And suffice it to say that my violin playing at home was not the total success that my parents would have wanted it to be. And at the end of one particularly arduous session, my mother came in the room and she said, Timothy, she says, you sound as though you've been strangling a cat. And that was how my nickname was born, Cat Strangler. But it's not the end of the story, because shortly after that, I have the feeling that my parents wanted to cut short my violin career because it wasn't going in the way that they expected it to. And what happened was this. I used to have to cycle back and to from school every day, 7.5 miles each way on my little push bike along a busy main road, which you could do in those days without too much trouble. And on Thursdays, I used to have to take my violin to school, and it was taken in one of these little violin cases. I'm sure you've seen the sort of thing. It's the sort of little black violin case, the kind you keep your Tommy gun in, that sort of little case. And I used to travel along to school with it balanced on the handlebar of my bike when I was cycling along. And one day, I'm sure my mother had something to do with this. I'm sure she sabotaged the catches on the violin case, because as I was cycling to school, the violin case popped open on this busy main road. And the violin that I had, which was my pride and joy, well, I say my pride and joy, it was the school's pride and joy, fell out from the violin case onto the road. And was hit by a passing lorry. Now, it didn't just knock the varnish off the violin. It actually reduced the violin to matchwood, to about 200 different pieces. Now, being a young 10-year-old lad with a conscience, I was mortified by this. I thought, what am I going to say? What am I going to say when I get to school? So anyway, I had to stop for 5 minutes and scrape up the 200-odd pieces of matchwood that were on the road back into the violin case and do the violin case up and carry on cycling to school. And I just couldn't think what I was going to say when I got to the violin class. Anyway, the violin class was at the end of the school day, and all through the school day I was thinking, what am I going to say, what am I going to say, what am I going to say? And we got to the violin class, and the violin teacher said, right class, open up your cases and take out your violins. And I opened up my case, and everybody was looking around at all these pieces of matchwood in my violin case. And I don't know what possessed me, ladies and gentlemen, but I looked at the teacher with tears in my eyes and said, it wasn't like that when I put it in there.
Oh, God. I never get tired of that. Oh, my gosh. And yeah, I love how people, well, I'm reticent in adding you as a Twitter contact because I'm afraid you strangle cats. I love that.
Oh dear. So yes, so my violin career never really took off. I do play the guitar now, and one of these days I'm going to make up some decent MP3 recordings and submit them to Kel for suitable playing when she thinks it's appropriate. When she thinks you need to be punished.
Oh, please do. Please do, because yes, you play guitar and you also sing. And
well,
I would love for people.
I have to say, I'm not the singer that Kel is. Kel has a magnificent voice when she sings. I'm sure she won't mind me saying so. But I do my little bit. I do my little bit. So yes, I'll sing you a couple of songs. But I write my own music as well. Some of it, it has to be said, would not probably go down well in the local mosque because of the subject matter.
You would be rivaling their call to prayer.
Yeah. I rather think they'd throw me out. If I got thrown out, I'd be lucky.
And just to let you know, Agador has just joined us in the chat room, and he said, I don't sing. I like people.
that's a little bit about my thinking. Yes.
Oh, I know. Ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to the East Anglian EDL radio show from last Friday, Jeff is enjoying a very well-deserved vacation at Christmas time with his family. And Tommy was asking me about this song I used to sing, and I sang this song. It's Strangers on a Plane, and it's a parody of Frank Sinatra's, you know, Strangers in the Night. And so I sang that to Tommy, and I explained to people that a year and a half ago, I used to sing this to him when he was a little EDL baby, and I'm his EDL mama, and that was his lullaby for him to go to sleep. And there were strangers on my flight. I saw them plotting. Something isn't right. So you'll have to listen to Jeff's program to get the rest of that. But I did get this naughty clip to work for me, Tim. And this is The War on Christmas. And we're going to, I'm going to let everybody take a listen to this, and I want to know what Tim thinks when we come back.
Okay. Jersey, welcome to Ledger Live. Well, it happens every year in some town in America, some atheistic curmudgeon with nothing better to do complains about Christmas decorations on public property, sparking a wave of irrational paranoia among people who think there's some sort of concerted war on Christmas going on, not just one atheistic curmudgeon with nothing better to do. The site of this year's War on Christmas is right here, Gloucester County, Pittman, New Jersey. It started when an anonymous resident complained to the Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation about this banner strung across Main Street that reads, "Keep Christ in Christmas." The foundation then wrote to the mayor saying the sign violated the constitutional doctrine separating church and state. Now, this town is founded as a Methodist retreat. It's got 13 churches and zero bars. Residents here are livid.
I dare somebody from the non-religious group in Wisconsin to come down and ask me to remove a sign that says, "Keep Christ in Christmas." I just dare them.
While some were confrontational, others just prayed for the anonymous atheist in their midst.
Forced to do wrong. Oh, Lord, do good to those who are good, whose hearts are in tune with you, but banish those who in turn, who turn to crooked ways, oh, Lord.
As is typical in these flare-ups, most people think the person who complained just doesn't like Jesus or religion.
It's insane.
They're not really up on the constitutional issue, which really is the only issue.
If you say God, it's okay. But if you say Jesus, or you say Christ, or you say Jesus Christ, I mean, everybody gets up in arms. And I don't understand. He is the Son of God. So I just don't understand.
People are up in arms because they think it's the government endorsing it by hanging that sign up. They don't have any problem with people mentioning Jesus or God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the issue? The issue here is the government endorsing the religion.
I didn't know anything about that. I just thought it was a personal preference that they didn't want it up. I have no idea about a government thing.
Now, if that argument sounds thin, well, the constitutional curmudgeon who complained, well, that argument doesn't hold any water either. Here's the problem with the complaint about this being on public property. The sign is tied up there to this bank on this side, and across the street it's tied to a telephone pole, which is also private property. The only beef they have is the fire department being used to hang up the sign. And it's a volunteer fire department. Now, besides Christmas trees and sales galore, there is one secular Christmas symbol this town has embraced. And let's face it, this guy has had more to do with overshadowing Christ's role in Christmas than any other. Santa Claus. I found him hanging out in a garden shed in a park next to the public library.
You're not the guy I want to anger this time of year, but there are a lot of people who blame you for kind of boxing out Christ and the baby Jesus this time of year.
Some people may believe that, but my belief is this. I always say, a Merry Christmas, everyone, never Happy Holidays. I explain to older children that understand Christianity what the day actually is and what it means to each parent. Banners and displays of Christianity should be available to those that want to look or believe and not be restricted because some do not believe.
You know my every thought went far away.
So from Pittman, New Jersey, a lovely town racked by a Christmas controversy in which one side has no real point and the other doesn't get the point.
That wraps up Ledger Live. Take it easy, Jersey. Merry Christmas.
Oh, and there we go. Okay, thank you. You not only didn't you want to play for me, now you want to play a lot of things for me. But, yeah, that is a real issue with me, Tim, in that I was actually on the phone with a representative for my insurance company because I was renegotiating my insurance policy. And, oh, by the way, I saved $60 a year with Geico. No, I'm just kidding, folks. But but at the end of the conversation, she said to me, "Happy Holidays." And I said to her back, I said, "Well, thank you very, very much. You've been so helpful. I appreciate all the work that you're doing for me. And Merry Christmas to you and your family, and a very, very, very Happy New Year." I could hear the relief in her voice that she heard Merry Christmas, because I know that's what she wanted to actually say. It seems it's not only politically incorrect to say Merry Christmas, but it's company policy in that you cannot say Merry Christmas to the clients because it's politically incorrect. Has Christmas become politically incorrect, or what is going on out there, Tim?
Well, it certainly seems it's that way here in the UK. A few years ago in my city, Birmingham, there was a motion put forward by somebody in the local council that Christmas should be renamed to Winterville. And that was receiving serious consideration for quite a while until a lot of people finally realised that that was a step too far, really, because, I mean, at the end of the day, say what you like, not everybody has to believe, but it's part of what made our civilization the great thing it is today. And I mean, a lot of people might say, oh, it's not perfect, and I'd be the last person to argue that it is perfect, but it's a darn sight better than what has been produced by other belief systems in the past, and it's a darn sight better than the one belief system, of course, that we're all having so much trouble with now. So we abandon it, really, at our peril. All right, it provides a framework where people who don't wish to believe, don't have to believe, they're not forced to believe, and they're not forced to parade their belief or disbelief, but it should retain, Christianity should retain a special place in our civilization because it was so important at the beginning of what has become arguably one of the greatest civilizations in the world, bar none. Some people may take issue with me on that. Well, they're perfectly free to do so. But the very fact that we can sit here and discuss these things and have the freedom of speech and to be able to discuss these things, that's part and parcel of the civilization that Christianity helped us realize. So, yeah, we should respect it. For that, you know, whether or not we actually believe in all the tenets of Christianity, we should respect what Christianity has given to our civilization. And as I said, we discard it at our peril, because if we discard it now, the forces of darkness, I know I sound like a bit like a radical preacher when I say this, but the forces of darkness will rush into the vacuum that we will leave if we discard Christianity from our civilization, and then everybody will be far, far worse off. Everybody, every single person in humanity will be far worse off. So I hope that we continue to push back against these people who say, bah humbug, we don't want the name of Jesus or Christ mentioned at this time of year. And for those people who say you've got to say happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, you know, I think we should be pushing back to them and say, the correct thing to say is Merry Christmas, none of this happy holidays rubbish. And we should be pushing back really hard, and especially if we have people of a particular belief system who say, all right, we don't celebrate Christmas, and they're offended when you say Merry Christmas to them, we should just say to them, well, you better just be offended. You better just suck it up. We're going to say Merry
I'm
Christmas
sorry,
to
I'm
you.
I'm sorry, I'm reading the chat room, and Vito Esposito said, Happy Kwanzaa, Tim.
Happy Kwanzaa, yes, okay. Well, fine, okay. But that's my perspective on it. So I think it's an important part of our civilization, and I think even for people who don't necessarily believe all the Christian tenets, they should recognise how important it is that it's given us a lot of the things we take for granted, and if we take it away, the space will be filled with something far worse, far, far worse. So that's my perspective on it.
That's mine. You mirror everything that I think, and I'm getting very, very sick and tired of this political correctness going on. It's been going on for way too long now. I don't know where this political correctness came along, but I remember years ago when I would phone maybe my utility company or whatever. I brought up the issue of renegotiating my house insurance and car insurance, and they sang Happy Holidays. Well, it wasn't like that 20 years ago. It used to be at this time of year, it was always Merry Christmas. You would go into a department store, you would pay for your purchases, and as you were leaving, the cashier would say Merry Christmas. It's not like that anymore. Now it's Happy Holidays. Have a happy holiday. It's not a holiday. It's Christmas, people. This is Christmas. Christmas. We are celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ. Like, what is so hard for people to get that through their heads? What is wrong with the governments and corporations all of a sudden turning on us, on our blessed holiday, the highest of holy holidays, and turning it into a happy holiday? No, that's not what it's all about. It's about celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ, who gave us Christianity and a path of righteousness in which to live, in a, how to treat our fellow man, how to conduct our everyday lives, how to have love in our hearts and share with you our blessings, and how we treat each other. This is what Christmas is all about. This is why we celebrate Christmas. This is also why we celebrate Easter. Jesus Christ died on the cross to absolve us of all our sins. And this is how we treat his memory, in that we walk around and we say, Happy Holiday. No! No, 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 no. Not on my watch. No, not on my Christmas special. If you weren't here at the beginning of the program, Tim and myself were talking about the giving, our large hearts, how we think about people globally and how they're not as fortunate as us, in that we have Christ in our hearts and we feel bad for them. We don't hate. See, Tim and myself, we're incapable of hate. We're incapable. Hatred is not a concept that we can absorb. We can despise things, yes, we can, but hatred is not one of them. And that's another thing that Jesus Christ taught us, is love your sinner, love your neighbor, love your enemy. That is what Christmas is all about to me. And, gee, Tim, I think I went off there again.
No, not at all, Kel. I mean, I agree with everything you say there. Political correctness is, of course, behind it. And you were saying, you know, how long has this been going on? I mean, I remember political correctness coming in probably about 40-odd years ago. And it was a relatively new thing. When I was at school, I suppose I'd have been round about the age when I had my little episode with the violin, when I first started to hear about political correctness. And at the time, I didn't think too much of it, because I wasn't really politically aware. I was just, it was on the edge of my consciousness, and I thought it's just one of these things you have to learn about as you grow up. And I didn't really think a great deal of it. But in fact, it's one of the most evil, insidious things, together with multiculturalism, that's ever been foisted on us in the West. But it was thought up many years ago, long before you and I were born, Kel, by people in the 1920s. I won't go into the history of it too much now, but I'll maybe talk about it at length on another show. People who recognised that if you wanted to destroy the foundations that Western civilization was built on, you had to do it in a very stealthy manner. And it wasn't going to be done overnight. It was something that might easily take 50, 60, maybe 100 years to do. And we're actually now at the point where that they have had a pretty much a free rein to introduce political correctness and multiculturalism into the consciousness of people.
Exactly.
Who are now forming our political elites and who run our mainstream media, which is why we have the problem that we do, because they were brought up with this this insidious evil mindset engendered by political correctness and multiculturalism, and they're projecting it on the rest of us. And we know something's not quite right, but it's only really now that we're starting to find the words to fight back with, because it is a war. It is a war of concepts and words that we're engaged in, amongst other things. And one of the things we have to realise is that language has been manipulated, so it no longer means what it meant 40 or 50 years ago. And yeah, they say, oh, you've got to say Happy Holidays instead of Christmas and all sorts of other things that are associated with political correctness and so on. We have to fight back. We have to say, no, Christmas means something much more special. It's not just a holiday. It's something that's fundamental to our civilization. It's so important that if we give it up, we're going to be giving up something that's so special to us. We won't even realize until it's replaced by something much, much worse, what it is that we threw away. We have to say that now. We have to be upfront and say it out loud. And people have to fight back against it. I mean, multiculturalism is the other aspect of it, where we're told that our civilization is nothing special and that other cultures, other civilizations are just as good as ours. Well, excuse me, but that's not true. Judeo-Christian civilization is vastly superior on almost every measurable scale compared to something like Islamic civilization, for example. If you look at, all right, I'm not talking about the personal and private belief system that people can practice when they're in their own home. I'm talking about the civilizational model that the Judeo-Christian principles have given us. They've given us something, again, which is vastly superior to anything that anybody has thought up before. And you only have to look at it. I'm talking about what you can see on a measurable scale. And you compare it to the Islamic civilizational model. Okay, again, I'm not talking about the personal private belief system that a Muslim might want to practice when he's in his own home or in his own private space. I'm talking about the civilizational model that Islam puts forward. Now, that is vastly inferior to what we have. And you only have to look at on every measurable scale, whether you're talking about compare it with any Islamic country or countries where Islam rules rather than Western civilization rules. You look at infant mortality, you look at longevity, you look at public health, you look at education, arts and literature, progress in science. Any one of those things where you can objectively measure, Islam falls flat on its face. It's not a good civilizational model. And for that reason alone, we should be promoting everything that's important in our Judeo-Christian principles, because our civilization is something that hopefully we are going to be able to pass on to our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely.
And if it's compromised or destroyed by a civilizational model which is demonstrably inferior, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren and our descendants are going to look back on us and say, we could have done something about this, but we chose not to do it. And I, for one, would think that would be a terrible thing. We can do something about it now. We're starting to wake up. We have the tools to spread the message.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We have the words that we need to inform people. All right, not everybody is going to wake up overnight. And some people may well think the whole concept is just too scary to even think about. And it is a scary thing. When you first contemplate something like this, it is big and scary and horrible to contemplate. Nobody wants to think that the good things, the freedoms that they enjoy now, will one day be taken away from them. But they will. They will be taken away if we do nothing. And that's why it's down to you and me to have shows like this and to talk to people in the way that we do, so that they can realize what is actually happening and hopefully pass on the message themselves.
And I think that is, I think that a lot of these programs do a wonderful job. We have two people, in fact, from the Radio Jihad Network in here right now, and that's Luchadora and Vito Esposito. They do shows once a week, and Luchadora sits on a panel at Reactionary Speaks. They talk about these issues. We have people like Jeff of the East Anglian EDL radio show. We have all sorts of these programs out there. And this is citizen journalism. All we try to do is give you a little bit of information and hope that you carry forth and do a little more homework. We are giving you the tools of knowledge in which you can pursue the issues that threaten us further. Right, Tim?
Yes, indeed. I see that Echo has put a question into the chat room. He says that we all know what Islam is. Mm. And the question is what to do about it. Well, I partially agree with that. You and I and the listeners on our show are pretty much aware of what Islam is, and it's not what Muslims tell us it is. the problem is, of course, that our political elites have bought into the Muslim narrative that Islam is somehow a peaceful and tolerant religion, and obviously that's a false narrative. People who promote that narrative are doing so under false pretenses, and I'm hoping one day they'll be held to account. But before we can do anything at all, we have to make people realise that there is a problem. And it's a much bigger problem than our political elites and our mainstream media are telling us. And that's the very first thing we need to do, is make everybody aware that there is a problem and that it's a solvable problem, because it is a solvable problem. Right now, as we speak, the problem is solvable. It might not be a painless solving of that problem, but it's solvable at this point. And we should, at the very first thing we need to do, as I say, is wake people up. The second thing we should try and do is bring about change in a non-violent manner. If we could, tomorrow or at the next time we have general elections, we could bring into power people who will make the appropriate changes happen, that would be far preferable to the alternative. Because if we can't bring people into power to make those changes, then what will happen is we'll be bequeathing a heritage of civil war and strife to our children and grandchildren that will cost millions of lives, just like Vorpalbite said a little earlier on in the chat room. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that. I don't want to see blood in the streets, but if that violent revolution comes, it's not going to be fought on some foreign battlefield. It'll be fought amongst us, on our streets, amongst us, and it will be as bad as it was in Syria today or Lebanon a generation ago, and it's avoidable. We have tools available to us now with the internet and social media and Blog Talk Radio, where we can spread that message and hopefully bring about change in a non-violent manner. But change will have to come, and if it comes and it's violent, I just think that'll be unfortunate. But we cannot possibly allow Islam to realise its goal of world domination, because everybody will be worse off because of it if that comes about.
Exactly. And I think on that note, we're going to take a little bit of a break, but we have so many people that are joining us, Tim. Agador, Kat, why do I always thank you for being here? You're the host, for goodness, the co-host, for goodness sake.
We have
Doc with us, Echo. We have a guest who joined us. Thank you, guest. We have Cat Girl, Luchadora, and to Knowledge, Vito Esposito, Vorpalbite, and Bigfoot was here earlier, and he had to leave to go to work, but he wanted to express to you and myself a very Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you very much, Bigfoot, and the same to you.
Now, I'm wondering, I have something here. I don't know if I should sing this or not, but I could if you want.
Oh, go on, Kel. I'd love to hear your dulcet tones of an evening.
On that, we were talking about the issue of being politically correct. Well, no, not happening, not on this Christmas program especially, and never for the rest of the 364 days of the year. So this is for the listeners. And this is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Are you ready? Okay. Get the kids out of the room. I might scare them, but here we go. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. And from now on, our troubles will be far away. Here we are, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we will all be together, if the fates allow. Now hang a shining star upon that highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now. Oh, well. I tried.
That was very nice. That was very nice, Kel. a lot better than my effort would be if I were to sing a cappella like that. So
it's hard to do. Yeah, oh, I know. But we do have somebody with a much better voice than myself, and I'm just trying
to scroll it up. I don't believe there's any such person.
Here, I've got this one, and I love this song, and I wrote down the authors of this little jingle. And this is from Margaret Whiting and Johnny Mercer. This is Christmas, baby. It's cold outside, and Tim and myself will see you back here in 3 minutes. Come on.
Any time to suit yourself, Kel. Don't worry about me.
Here we go.
I really can't
but
stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go
but
away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you'd drop
so
in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my mother will start to
beautiful,
worry.
What's your hurry?
And father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
so
roar.
Really I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't
well,
hurry.
Maybe just a half a drink
put
more.
Put some records on while I
the neighbors
pour.
Might say
maybe it's bad out there.
Hey, what's in this
no
drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your eyes are like starlight now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no,
mind
no,
if I'm moving
at
closer.
Least I'm going to say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh,
baby,
but
it's cold,
cold
outside.
Must
but
go.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The answer
but
is no.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This welcome is
how
been
lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that
my
storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
waves
door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is
ooh,
vicious.
Ooh, your lips are
maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to get
but
home.
But baby, you freeze out there.
Say, lend me a
it's
coat.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been
I
grand.
I thrill when you touch my
but
hand.
But don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
at
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty in
if you caught pneumonia and
I really
died,
can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt.
But it's cold outside.
And there you go. And everybody, welcome back. Just to remind you, you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger with your hosts, Tim and Kel, and we are celebrating Christmas with you today. Hey, Tim, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh. Far away?
In England. In England, you refer to Santa Claus as Father Christmas, and you say Happy Christmas. What are the idiosyncrasies of Christmas celebrations in England that maybe are apart from the North America or Australia or anything else. What, for example, do you have any traditions that you may do on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning? What is Christmas like for you?
Oh, well, I'm trying to think in of ways in which it might differ. It used to be a tradition, although you don't get it so much now, that for young children, you used to put a big sock at the bottom of their bed on Christmas Eve night, and you'd fill it with fruit like clementines and nuts and things like that. We don't seem to do that so much these days, but that was certainly something that was pretty much taken for granted when I was growing up. We're talking more years ago than I care to admit, really. June's just shouting over from the other side of the room that it does still happen in some families. I mean, that's something that I didn't think happened so much now, and I don't know if it was ever a tradition in the United States, but I think by and large most of the traditions that I can think of over here also exist to a greater or lesser extent in the United States. I can't think of anything that's radically different, to be quite honest. I'm sure somebody will drop something into the chat room to remind us of the odd differences. I can't believe there aren't any other differences, but there's nothing that springs to mind immediately.
What we do in Canada and in the United States is, we hang our Christmas stockings, and they would usually be hung by, like, in the living room where the Christmas tree was, somewhere around there. Mom or Dad would tack one up. And, we would get fruit. We would get an orange, and we would get little treats in there as well, maybe something tiny, like a little toy or something like that. And I like what Agador brought up in the chat room. Back in ye olden days, tropical fruit was a rare treat in the winter because it wasn't so easy to get. And that's true. I was watching a movie, as a matter of fact, a few weeks back, and it was during the Civil War, and this man was relating that he had brought home an orange for his wife, and she didn't know what it was. She didn't know what to do with it. She wanted to save it and bake it. And he had to explain to her, no, you peel it, because there were, she had never seen fruit. She'd never seen tropical fruit in her life.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's interesting that I think that's part of where that tradition comes from, putting an orange in a Christmas stocking.
Oh, right. I see that Vorpalbyte has put a line in the chat room talking about Scrooge. And he says Scrooge was an Englishman. Well, okay, I'm not quite sure what his point
Ebenezer
is there.
Ebenezer
Scrooge. I mean, he was a character obviously thought up by Charles Dickens, and I do think of that story every Christmas, because there's quite a poignant parable to that story about a very tight-fisted guy. I mean, that's the kind of guy I can identify with. The kind of guy that makes his employees work on Christmas Day, the kind of guy who would get a tiny young lad on sticks that's a cripple and sort of treat him harshly and so on. No, that's not me really. But
I know it's not.
I'm trying to think what might have happened in 100 years ago, which is when Charles Dickens was writing this story. In fact, probably more than 100 years ago now. How Christmas might have differed from what we see today. I mean, obviously, there's a turkey is something that's been popular all over the intervening time. The tradition of making your employees work on Christmas Day, well, that's abated somewhat. We don't seem to see that so much now. In fact, I had terrible trouble last time when I had to ask one of the people who worked for me many years ago if he would work on Christmas Day, and he said no. He relented eventually when I started sort of tapping the nails into his finger joints, and after the third one, he relented and he agreed to work on Christmas Day. But I mean, normally we don't tend to ask that of our employees now, unless it's a public service that has to be maintained on Christmas Day, in which case the tradition is to pay people a little bit more for it because we recognise they're giving something up. But I can't think of that many differences between now and then. Christmas is has been a time of celebration in, broadly speaking, the same way in the intervening 100, 150 years. And I don't think there's all that many differences between... Agador has said that in the US you don't celebrate with party games and crackers and such.
That's one possibility. Yes, Agador brought... Oh, Tim, I love Christmas crackers.
Oh, yes, I do too. In fact, I've got another little anecdote to tell you about that. With Christmas crackers that we get over here... depending on where you get the Christmas crackers from, you pull these crackers and there's sometimes a little toy in there or sometimes a little party hat, and usually there's a little Christmas joke, a Christmas cracker joke or a Christmas motto or something like that,
or a riddle or something like that.
And last time I celebrated Christmas with some of my family. there was in the Christmas crackers there were various Chinese sayings, and one of them that I read out is quite an interesting Chinese saying, and I remember being taught this saying some years ago, and that is, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Now, if you've got to think about that particular saying before it makes sense, but the point is that if you're not ready for something, then often you don't acknowledge that in fact there's somebody there who can teach you. Anyway, I was relaying this to somebody at our family Christmas dinner. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And he didn't get it at all. He said, what kind of teacher is that? The teacher should be there for when the student comes in. What do you mean? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. He says, if I had a teacher like that, I'd get him sacked. And he just didn't get it at all. But that's one thing that I really quite like about Christmas, is that sometimes you'll get something like that will come up in conversation, and we'll all have a good laugh over it, all except that particular gentleman. We were laughing all afternoon, and he still didn't realise what we were laughing about, but that's just my little story. But yes, crackers, if you don't get crackers in the United States, people, you want to revive that tradition, because it is a lot of fun. Agador says, pulling the crackers looks like a ton of fun. And I can vouch for that. There's nothing like pulling a little cracker at Christmas. So,
absolutely. I love that. You won't believe this. We're down to our last 18 minutes. I want to share with you, Tim. Uh-huh. I want to share this with you, Tim. You're getting a Christmas greeting from David Cameron and Nick Clegg in here.
Oh, how nice.
Here you go. Here you go. Here's their Christmas greeting.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away. This year,
to save it from
sneezes, I will give it to someone special. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away.
You gave it away.
This
save me from
sneezing. I will give it to someone special. Once bitten and twice shy, I keep my distance, but you still catch my eye. Tell me, baby, do you recognize me? Well, it's been a year. It doesn't surprise me. Happy Christmas. I wrapped it up and sent it with a note saying, I love you, I've learned it.
Now,
I know what a fool I've been, but if you kiss me now, I know you'd fool me again. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away.
You gave it away.
This year,
to save me from
sin, I don't give it to someone special, special. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away. I don't give it to someone special.
And oh my gosh, Tim, that guy sings worse than me.
Oh, well, that's so nice. And do you know, I've got some jellyfish friends who are going to save up and send David Cameron and Nick Clegg a brand new spine each for Christmas, and that because they are so jealous of the fact that that David Cameron and Nick Clegg have even less spines than these jellyfish do. So they're saving up to send them a special one for Christmas. Isn't that nice?
That's lovely. Absolutely lovely. I'm loving every minute of it. We are down to our last 15 minutes. Tim and myself, we have been talking about Christmas. We have been sharing with you our parables or our parodies, as Jeff would say. But we started out the program talking about remembering those around the globe that are not having a merry white Christmas. It's not all merry and white for a lot of people out there. There are things that you can do. This may be a little too late, but maybe not, because we are still 2 days away from Christmas. But there are 6 things that you can do for those who are less fortunate in your community, because it hurts my heart to turn on the news and see how homeless are deceased due to the elements outside. We hurry and we scurry and we get our Christmas shopping done, and we come back to our comfortable homes, and we celebrate Christmas with our loved ones. But there are so many people out there that do not have a Christmas. But there are a few things you can do. One is know your city. Know where did the homeless congregate, for example. Are there fast food services available in that area? Do city buses run there? Why don't you take a family on a field trip and drive around your city and find the needs? Let your children see beyond the walls of your own neighborhood and comfort zone. Plan a day for you and your children to shop for those in need. Explain the needs of those that you saw and make a list of things that can bless them. Decide how many gift bags you'd like to keep in your car for those special stops. If you live in a city where there are homeless, they are always in need of toothbrushes, toothpaste, deodorant, body wash, long socks, underwear, water, and granola bars. Most of those items can be found at the Dollar Tree for a dollar. For those suffering during the winter months, warm blankets, thick, long tube socks, and mittens, those make a very special gift. Have a fun package bag for the homeless. Buy brown paper bag lunch sacks. Let your children decorate the bags with colorful markers, including a favorite scripture. Then stuff the bags with the items you got from the dollar store. Keep these bags in your car where they are easy to get when you see someone in need. Write a Christmas message on the bags or include a Christmas greeting and message. Your words will be treasured. Buy a $5 gift card to a fast food restaurant in the area. Keep a few gift cards in your car or in your pocket, in your purse, and have them ready for those in need on the corners or wherever you run into them. When you see someone in need or your children are asking you to stop to help someone, keeping your doors locked, roll your windows down and hand them a gift card. You don't have to keep your doors locked, but you can roll down your window. You can get out of your car, and you can go and shake their hand and hand them that gift card. you will be so blessed by these sweet smiles on their faces because they are appreciative. They can, in turn, use these cards for warm drinks, coffee, hot chocolate, tea, and it'll get them out of the cold as well. Give away blank stamped Christmas cards. Many of this time of year long to hear from a family, but do not have the means to send a Christmas greeting. Buy a box of cards, then stamp the blank card and hand them out to those you come in contact with. You are sure to bring a smile that way as well. Give a handwritten Christmas card. If you are out on the community often and have formed a relationship with someone, please remember them for your Christmas card list. It doesn't take anything fancy. Handwrite a card or have your children make them. Include a message of Christmas cheer and words of encouragement. Always remember our Savior this season. May we remember those he came to hang out with and bless. You and I can surely make a difference when we look beyond ourselves. There you go, Tim.
Yeah, that's very good because a lot of people don't think outside the box when Christmas comes. They just they obviously think about their family, but they don't think about what practical things they can do to make life a little bit easier for those less fortunate who may. I'm not talking about sending a few dollars over to starving people in Africa, commendable though that might be. I'm talking about, you know, the guys that, as Agador has said in the chat rooms, it might just be some homeless guys that hang out around a local bus stop. You know, doesn't cost you more than a moment to go and get them a couple of little things and make their life a little bit better over the Christmas time. And, you know, a little something like that could make a big difference to people in a less fortunate position. So if you do have the opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, do give a little bit of thought to what Kel said and see if there's a difference that you can make to somebody not too far away from you.
Exactly. And, Tim, we're going to wrap up this show. I'm going to do something for a fellow patriot that we lost this week, and that is Loki. I want to give you, though, the second last word to wrap up your Christmas salutations.
Well, I haven't got a little Christmas parable in the same way that you have, and to be fair, I think there isn't really a great deal I would want to say that would take away that I would want to take away from what you said. But I'd say again that the most important thing about a time like Christmas, it gives you an opportunity to stop what you're doing, which is most people go through 52 weeks of the year and they've got their nose to the grindstone and they never give a thought to what's outside their immediate little bubble. They've got, as long as they can keep a roof over their head and look after their family, and they're lucky enough to have a job and they go to work and they can come home and they can keep their life ticking over. A lot of people never think beyond that, which, okay, in some respects that may be understandable for a lot of people, but Christmas time is a time where you can take a little bit of time and think about people less fortunate than you. And if you have the opportunity to do something to make a difference to somebody, please consider doing it. I know I mentioned what Agador said in the chat room, but little things can make a big difference to people who've got less than you. So please give them a thought.
Tim, thank you so very much for your a wonderful co-host with whom to do the show. I think it went very, very well today. I'm very, very proud to know you.
You're too kind, Kel. You're too kind. It's a pleasure to be on
goodness.
Your show. It's a pleasure to be on
Absolutely.
Your show.
The Monday show is our show. I'm so pleased to have met you and that you can join me in the studio and do the show together. I am very grateful to you. I want to wish you and your family nothing more but a blessed Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you very much, and the same to you and your family as well, Kel, and the same to all the ladies and gentlemen out there who've spent the past couple of hours with us. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you all, and that's to you and your families. So Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And with that, we are going to close out, but we do want to remember a patriot, an international patriot, and that is Loki of the halls of Valhalla. Tim Curlin was a patriot who was taken from us suddenly the other day. He was a man of conviction who stood up for the rights of Americans and those of us worldwide. He was also instrumental in fighting the scourge. He was a regular contributor at Jihad Killer Hour, hosted by Pat Dollard on Block Talk Radio, where his insights were deeply absorbed, and he gave us homework to pursue the issues of the day. He was also the creator of the Halls of Valhalla, which is also heard on Block Talk Radio. Loki, you were my Norse god. You will be deeply, deeply missed. But Loki walks with angels now. Loki from Pinocchio, thanks so much for your presence within our earthly realm. We will meet again to ensure the mischief carries on and that the lights of fires within the hearts of men continue. That is from me. This is from... Pardon me. This is from Holger. This is a Viking prayer. Lo there do I see my father. Lo there do I see my mother and my sisters and my brothers. Lo there do I see the line of my people back to the beginning. They do bid me to take my place amongst them in the halls of Valhalla, where the brave may live forever. This is from Bigfoot. Although Tim traveled to Washington, D.C. a few times along with other BTR users, I never had the pleasure of meeting him in person, but even so, I will be among those in our little section of the conservative side of the blogosphere who will miss him and his constitutional patriotism. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family. And A12 Iggy Mum also had her post, The Passing of Tim Curlin. And she has beautiful slides, and one is a tradition the Vikings do, and that is to put the deceased on a boat and set it afire to send them off into the halls of Valhalla. So I want to thank everybody who is remembering Loki. I want to thank you, Tim, very, very much for being here today with me. And I want to thank you for me being here with you. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim and myself, we're going to play out with a Christmas carol. And this is in memory of Loki from the halls of Valhalla. Tim, I'll talk to you this week.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yes. Well, if I don't speak to you before Christmas Day itself, I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. And I'm sure I'll speak to you between now and the new year. But have a great
Absolutely.
Time. And thank you for the show tonight. It's been really good working with you on the show.
You too, Tim. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you. I will talk to you soon. Merry Christmas, everybody, and thank you all for being here. And thank you at A12 Iggy Mum, who is here, and Agador, Cal Living joined us, Kath, Doc, Echo, Cat Girl, N2 Knowledge, Vito Esposito, Forplebite, Luchadora, Bigfoot, everybody, thank you so very much. Have a merry, merry Christmas. And Loki, this is for you.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Baby, I've been here before. I know this room. I walk this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you. Yeah, and I've seen your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love, love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a cold, ain't it ever broken? Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I've told the truth, I didn't come all this way.